This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, the Acres and Acres and the Tar and Cement. There's three people come across the Tar and Cement this morning in some way or other there. And City Limits, it's the fourth Wednesday of the month. Is it the fourth Wednesday of the month? It is indeed, yes. Is it?
Oh, time has no meaning at this point in history.
No, I think it is. Or, no, it's the third. Who knows? Now, we had housing last week. That was the third. So it is the fourth. I'm getting totally confused here today. But speaking of getting confused, our little helper, so to speak, panellists, Ed Maxwell and Timothy, both here today. So there
it's a gathering.
Could be no one here next week.
Yes.
I'm Kevin Healy. It is City Limits. We're going to talk today to lawyer Max Costello. Max, I think he's a retired lawyer now, but Max has worked in refugee issues and human rights issues, and he's written a paper, Angus Taylor, saying he would not give rights to certain people, refugees and people he didn't like, they wouldn't be able to get any help from the Australian government. Well, Max says that under international conventions, they're obliged to. Australia is obliged to provide for everybody, and we'll also get on to housing because that's part of what's supposed to be provided. Hmm. So we'll be talking to Max about all those things in the second half. He's also got some ideas on how we can make the tax system a lot better too, which
I can't wait for that one.
I'm sure, and you'd find interesting.
Yeah.
Now a cup of tea. We better pour this. It's a bit of a mixture this morning because there was still some Vietnamese green in the thing from last week and I added some jasmine. So you've got to put a mixture of jasmine and Vietnamese green this morning. And who wants first tip? There's the pup with all the dots on it. There's a grey and sort of grey and even more grey one and a black one, all sort of black.
Dots for me, matches my mood.
You want dots? Okay.
Dots for antimony.
Dots for antimony.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you've got next choice, Anne.
I'll go the smaller cup here.
Okay.
Because you always go through twice as much tea as I do.
Rightio, there we are.
Now, it's dry sense of humour.
That's right.
I think we don't need to say more about this than I think this has to be the absolute optimism of the week award to the Herald Sun for the headline last week, World Celebrates End of Iran War.
I can't believe you missed out on the Optimism of the Week award again, Kevin.
Who wants to suggest the Iran war has actually ended? Anyone? No? Okay. No starters. This is beautiful, by the way. This was in the middle of the Herald Sun. You get these regularly, these things from a mob called the Bradford Mint. And I think this one is one we should all jump on. I'm sure we all want it. Time passes, love endures. 65th anniversary of Diana, the People's Princess. Pure silver commemorative set. And you get all these commemorative sets. And you can also pick up Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, the Royal Australian Tours commemorative set. But none of them actually give a price. You've got to ring up or email or something to get the price. But isn't it beautiful? The Princess of Hearts.
What is the Bradford Mint? I was reading up about mints just recently in Australia.
Well, that Perth Mint stuff.
They make lots of money out of these sort of things.
Well, the Western Australian Mint, when it was founded, it's the only state mint that has the authority to mint our currency.
Yeah, well,
aside from the Canberra Mint.
This lot are always royals or war things, commemorating war and killing. So they do some wonderful things. It'd be great to have the whole collection. Well, but I thought you'd be rushing in to get all that.
What will the archaeologists think of us in 500 years' time?
Oh, they'll think we used a lot of plastic.
That's true.
I'm only interested in chocolate mints myself. But what's that place in Gibbon that's surrounded by barbed wire if it's not a mint?
Yes, there is a Melbourne mint as well. I think they can outsource it. Yeah, but there's something different about West Australia because it wasn't sure that they would join the Federation when the mints were all established.
Yes, there you are. That's more. I think actually, Antimony had a chocolate mint for breakfast. Didn't
that's the best kind of mint, the minty mints.
I'm developing a cough.
I do hope they do a whole series. They have the People's Princess, and then they have the Anti-Kindness Princess, and then they have the Dog Princess, and they have the Panda Princess. I hope this is the beginning of a series.
Yes, well, but still, I don't know what it costs, but I think whatever you spend, it's worth every cent of it.
Well, if they don't have a price, then it's free. What I've always learnt.
Yeah, time passes, love endures. Isn't that beautiful?
It's very Hallmark, isn't it?
It's lovely, isn't it? Anyway... One I wasn't going to mention today, but it's in this morning's paper. ANZ has been caught up in an alleged case of unauthorised land clearing in a critical Queensland koala habitat.
Oh, my God.
And they've made promises they would, you know, they'd check all these things out, but it seems they haven't, and they're now in a bit of trouble. They've been hit by... the Australian Conservation Foundation is accusing them of just... you know, loaning money to these companies without really checking out their credentials. And it also points out there's a hell of a lot of land clearing and et cetera going on in these things. And anyway, they're in trouble again. We might follow up on that one, but that's the latest on that little caper.
Good old ANZ. Mm.
Oh, yes.
Hmm. That's one of the main reasons for species extinction in Australia is the land clearing.
And you'll be pleased to know also that the cryptocurrency thing, Donald's involved in.
I just laugh here. Anyone says cryptocurrency just makes me laugh.
Which, you know, is quite amazing, isn't it? It even exists. But anyway, with this awful cough now as they come into the studio.
You're allergic to crypto, that's why.
The perhaps Donald Trump's given it to me, but it's now the biggest earner for the Trump family.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they've managed to turn it into a way of converting crypto into dollars is basically what they've done.
But they say there's no conflict of interest with the fact that they actually also oversee the regulation for the whole thing.
None at all.
None whatever. No.
He became a crypto bro.
No, the response was, no, the president nor his family have ever engaged or will ever engage in conflicts of interest, a White House spokesperson said. All actions by President Trump and his administration are taken in the best interest of the American people. So, obviously, Donald and his family making trillions out of this is in the best interest of the American people.
Yeah, I might keep that one.
And if there is a conflict, it'll just be over in 3 days and it'll be really easy.
Yes, that's right. But through all that...
Can I just mention?
Yes.
They're doing this through stable coins. So stable coins are pegged to the dollar, and that is how they're maintaining the value of them.
I don't understand.
And that was all about law.
What does that mean?
So a crypto coin, like you buy one, and you don't know tomorrow if it's going to be worth $1 million or no dollars.
And these are the ones that come from the ancient tombs of kings.
No, Bitcoin. So they're actually digital currency.
Yeah, they're a form of Bitcoin.
They're not a currency and they're not a coin, they're a digital asset. So they're just bits and bytes in a computer is all they are.
Uh-huh.
And people call them coins, right? And they've now, there was legislation, thanks to Donald Trump and his ilk, which created these things called stable coins.
They're
also bits and bytes in a computer.
Okay, why do I want to buy bits and bytes in a computer? I already own a computer.
Exactly. So, the stable coins are pegged to the dollar, which is why Trump and others who have the stable coins can be sure that they're not going to go down in value.
Well, but that's in the interest of the American people, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah.
What does peg to the dollar mean?
It means that whatever the dollar's worth, the stable coin will be worth.
Ah. But is it just like, how does that happen? Do they just say it?
But they passed a law to say this is how it works.
Oh, that's okay.
Law which a lot of people opposed, but of course a lot of people had vested interests as well.
In fact, the Australian dollar used to be pegged
to
the US dollar, and then Paul Keating changed that. And that's why our dollar is now worth a lot less than the American dollar in terms of actual value.
That's a whole episode.
That's right.
Another show.
Thank you, Paul Keating.
Yes.
That was part of the...
Actually, I'm quite in favour of that move. For various reasons.
Mm. Well, that's right.
But I feel like we should just have an episode where I just ask you guys what happened before 1990.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Tell us, let us go, let us turn us loose. Now, the Lowy Institute has done a poll that shows, this is terrible, only 21% of Australians have confidence in Donald Trump to do the right thing in world affairs, the lowest for an American president in the survey's history.
So what's going on with 20% of Australian population?
Who are these people?
That's right. I mean, that's the question. Where were the 21%, for God's sake? Who'd believe anything about him? Anyway, that's that. In fact, there's more faith now in China than in America on this survey. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
Donald's done a great job.
Is that about the same percent who rather like Pauline?
Probably, yeah, it's about roughly.
Might be a bit of an overlap.
Yeah, around about there somewhere.
I guess you can have confidence in him without liking him. You can have confidence in him to
that's true.
Be Donald Trump.
Trump.
Yeah, that's right. We, in that sense, yeah, we're all confident, aren't we, in him. Now, also, though, this is more concerning. Yes, it is more concerning. A severe heat wave has gripped Europe again, and this is just the start of their summer, really. But there were, terrible. There was all sorts of things happening around Europe over the weekend, with tarmacs melting and public transport thrown into confusion and extreme conditions. And only in the very last paragraph of this story does it point out, experts say the situation reflects a broader trend, heat waves in Europe becoming more frequent and intense due to climate change now.
Actually, can you pass me, you have a sip of tea, because while we're speaking of money, a few people sent City Limits a bit of money.
well, most of those have been announced.
Have they? Yeah. I think there's four that haven't. But anyway, quickly, Colleen from Heidelberg West, Andrew from Preston, Kevin from Brunswick, and Bruce from Brunswick.
I do see a Kevin from
That's
Brunswick.
That's a familiar
any,
Kevin.
Any relation?
Say moi.
Donating to your own show.
Yep.
But there's still time to donate.
Trump move.
There's still time to donate. Radiothon has officially finished, but we still need to
make
our target.
No, it goes through all June, so it's still going. Yes.
Goes up
and
to the
we need more money.
End
yes.
of the financial year.
But thanks to all those who've given, and thanks to all those who will give.
Yes.
It's on the way. I'm sure it's on the way.
Yeah, please feel free to send a text, give us a call, or donate until June 30.
The other poor problem for Don, of course, is that he's put this reflecting pool in Washington, and of course it with all the work he did to do it, it got old guy. They had to clean that out. Then the paint at the bottom cracked after all that, and floated everywhere. And now he says it's due to vandals, not to his work. but the whole thing has won millions of dollars of total failure, which is all very wonderful.
This is from an ex-developer.
Yes, that's right. And they've also, of course, forced to take down his name off the Kennedy Center, which is awful, isn't it? Yeah. But therefore, he's closed the center now for 12 months for so-called renovations. So people can't see, but his name isn't there anymore, poor man. It's a terrible thing.
I heard a man was arrested for leaning over and, like, picking up one of the flecks of paint that was just floating on the surface.
Yes.
Like, as a vandal, as an act of vandalism.
Wow.
Yes, he's been charged, that poor man, but, well, there you are, he's a vandal. The Reserve Bank, which we all love, and which loves workers particularly...
we know and love so well.
..says there aren't enough unemployed and there's we have to have wage restraint.
Look, well, I'm trying. I've been unemployed for ages. I'm doing my best to keep wages down.
Yes, well, congratulations, you're a hero
you're
as far as...
You're an inflation fighter.
That's right. Known as the Reserve Bank hero, Antimony.
an essential worker.
But it's certainly practising wage restraint because it's currently in a blue with its own workers. It's offered them a pay rise over 3 years, 3.5% first year, 3% second, 3% third, that the union says, the finance sector union says, doesn't go anywhere near matching inflation in that time. And the negotiations are going on, but the bank's holding firm and... saying that it has to keep inflation under control, and it's showing great wage restraint with its own workers apart from anything else. Isn't that wonderful to know?
At least they're consistent.
Yeah, that's right. It's just lovely to know. And another one, a terrible situation though for the Woodside and other workers out on these platforms out in the ocean, drilling up gas and keeping the world going. The mob who work for the caterer mob called Compass Group, their workers are threatening strike action, and it means that the people working on those platforms will have to have just a very ordinary food, and won't even get knives and forks. They'll have to get plastic knives and forks, and it's all awful. But Compass, the company, said is committed to offering its people competitive pay and conditions, and has a well-established track record of treating employees fairly. Negotiations are ongoing. Well, they certainly are, because the agreement ran out in February, and they're still negotiating. So there you are. Mm. So if the agreement runs out and you keep negotiating it, you put off and put off and put off, having to give the workers more, of course. So it works out very well. But it's a terrible thing that the workers out in those platforms won't be as well fed as normal, thanks to other workers. Isn't that terrible?
I never really thought about how people on oil rigs and such organise their food. I just assumed they had fish and chips every night.
Yeah, well,
astronaut.
Well, the staff, apparently the catering staff also live on these things, or on there for, for a week or whatever you're out there for. But it does say production workers at Woodside's offshore gas platforms could be deprived of Mexican food and Swedish smorgasbords while forced to use plastic forks, as the catering staff move to impose bans. So there you are. Now, here's an interesting one. The University of Wollongong University, a former vice chancellor who had worked for years at Corder Mentha, the consulting firm. Anyway, he became vice chancellor, and Corder Mentha then got a $300,000 contract with the university, which ballooned out to $3.7 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. He was on leave of absence at the time from Corder Mentha. Now, you're in a bit of a surprise move, because I can't imagine what's wrong with all that. The Independent Commission Against Corruption is examining the whole thing. Yes, three separate allegations during a public probe into the conduct of senior leaders, and there's a number of people at the university. And anyway, he was a consultant at the insolvency firm, and that's what happened. But it's being investigated, which is a bit ordinary, isn't it?
These chancellors get up to a few tricks, don't they? I remember you speaking about another chancellor who had some consulting going on.
Right. Yes, well, you had the chancellor at ANU who recently resigned. Julie Bishop, who's just resigned, but she of course operated from an office in Perth overlooking the Swan River as Chancellor of ANU in Canberra. They spent thousands and thousands renovating or fixing up the office for her.
It helps you do your work when you've got a nice office.
And the office was also, of course, the office of her own consulting firm. They also employed two staff for her to help her, who also were employed by her consulting firm. But she insisted, and the university at the time insisted, there was absolutely no conflict of interest.
Of course not. Doesn't sound like it.
None whatever. But
just efficient.
Yes, just recently been forced to resign, and she's actually sent a nasty letter back to the government saying she resigned because of the terrible regulations the government was imposing on the university. But, of course, at the same time as all this was going on, and she also spent thousands and thousands in travelling from one to other, and yet at the same time they were slashing costs all over the place and slashing courses and slashing staff.
That 2 days a week work from the office policy really bites when you work in Perth. And
that's right. Who needs education when you're a university?
Yes, and you've got to look out over the Swan River every morning and think about what's happening to your life. It's terrible. Now, we all know also that since the government brought in new industrial relations laws, that unions are moving into the Pilbara, which for many, many years was totally union-free.
Blissfully union-free.
Yeah, the mining companies say, well, it was much better when it was union-free because it, you know, it just suited everybody. It was win-win. It's always win-win, isn't it, from the employer's point of view? And it certainly is. It's win-win-win-win-win. But
Who writes the game.
That's right. It's like that work choices. You know, it's much easier for a worker to sit down with the boss and work out their own situation, like, you know, on equal footing. They're all pretty upset. BHP, of course, made the point, we've mentioned many times, that because of the same job, same pay, it has workers working alongside its own labour hire workers. Yeah. But the labour hire company that it employs is, in fact, an offshoot. It's a subsidiary of BHP itself. So they're actually direct employees of BHP in that sense. Mm. But it says that if it were forced to give them equal pay, it would cost it $300,000, I think, a year. I think that's the figure they put on it.
Oh, no.
And I can think of no other explanation, and someone might explain to me why there is another explanation, but I can think of no other explanation than they're ripping off those workers to the tune of $300,000 a year. That's the only possible explanation I can think of.
Uh-huh. When you do the math... It does look that way.
It does look that way. Anyway, they're complaining about that. But also, there's now threats of general strike at BHP, which, of course, we know BHP is the big Aussie. We all love it. Stands for bloody huge profits, bloody huge, bloody huge polluter. And anyway, they're actually recruiting because of the threat of a strike that may happen in the next few weeks. They're recruiting what's called in the paper a rebel workforce, offering them $93 an hour to start work.
Well, that sounds very cool.
Yes, that's right, to overcome the strike. Now,
that sounds very Orwellian, yes, calling them rebels.
Right. Yep. That's right. Now, well, of course, you can't use that other word because it's illegal. It's legal. So we'll say it, but we'll say it because but the word scab... Now, scab is now an illegal word. You call people
really?
Scabs. Well, it's happened in industrial relations law that people have been actually prosecuted for calling scabs scabs.
Wow.
Well, shall we be tackling you to the ground with our hands over your mouth?
Yeah, that's right. And I could well be prosecuted now for having just said it. Now, also, of course, if the workers who are on strike then have a picket line to keep the scabs, the rebel workforce out, then they too would be illegal because the law has also decreed that picket lines are illegal if they actually work as picket lines and stop things happening inside the thing they're trying to stop. So there you are.
Are they suggesting that the union is like the Empire from Star Wars? And
that's right.
They're like
the corporations of the rebels.
Yeah.
It gets your head really messed up, doesn't it?
Yeah, but anyway, rebel workforce is now a new word for we can't say it, can we?
I'm just imagining they've got like neon parachute pants and like cool shoulder pads.
Parachuting in to work for the mine.
That's right. That's the go over there. Now, Grilled, the burger company, grilled the workers. They've been accused many, many times of treating their workers very badly indeed. And they also were done for serious food safety concerns. One case, a dead mouse was seen hanging from a vent, which is pretty encouraging. Anyway,
conditions got so bad that even the mice are hanging themselves.
Yeah, they've got a long record, and they also, of course, run the chocolate one, Cocoa, whatever that one's called.
Not Cocoa Black.
Cocoa Black, yeah. So that's the same mob. So
they don't even do burgers.
Which is so if you like chocolate, don't go to Cocoa Black because it's part of the Grill Empire. But anyway, the bloke who runs it, a bloke called Simon Crow. Despite all that, he says that the workers are all he cares about. Yes, his top priority. 4,000 employees are his top priority. despite the fact that there's been multiple clashes in the Fair Work Commission. He's tried to stop rises. They've paid workers, you know, on an old award thing that goes back years, that and they've been forced to now pay up even more. But he said, and I think you've got to believe the man, our number one constituent is our people. If they feel like they're cared for, if they feel like they're respected, if they feel like they belong, then by default that will flow through to our guests, you see. So now, of course, if he says flow through to our guests, that means the customers, one assumes, that if we're guests, we should be able to walk in and just pick up a hamburger and walk out again, I would have thought.
Your guest rights.
it's a bit like Meyer saying, you know, that slogan of theirs, Meyer is my store. I think, well, it's my store, I can just walk in and pick up anything and go home. I'm sure I'd get charged with shoplifting, even though it is my store. So I have trouble with that one.
Well, you could be a rebel and go and work for them.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, the grilled man, he does, you're pleased, despite all the industrial relations issues, he cares about the workers. Isn't that good news?
It's good to hear.
Which shows that this is so grossly unfair, what I'm about to tell you. They had they ran a promotion thing, where for one, on every Tuesday, Tree Day Tuesday they called it, and $1 for every hamburger sold was going to be donated to an environmental cause. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't it? Almost as beautiful as the princess, really, isn't it?
They're the ones, aren't they? They have the jar there. Yeah. You can put a token in for a worthy cause.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no, greenwashing or anything going on there? No.
Well, The greenwashing is actually in the headline here. Please, yes, it's a bit of a problem. It turns out that there were terms and conditions applied. Now, of course, if ever you see an ad for something and at the bottom it says terms and conditions apply,
tiny, tiny print,
you can be bloody certain they do. You know? And the thing isn't quite as good as it looks. Anyway, due to the terms and conditions, apparently a very, very small amount of the money they raised actually went to environmental causes. And now, damn it, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission is taking them to court over it for greenwashing or misleading customers. Greenwashing, isn't that terrible?
What are they thinking? They're just trying to do their bit for the environment.
It's disgraceful, isn't it, the way some people are treated. But the Victorian state government is bringing in work from home laws, and they're so bad that a bloke from a mob called Luxury Escapes said the economy is like a patient lying in a coma. The horrific WFH laws aren't trying to save the patient, but driving a dagger through its heart, the heart of the economy, dagger through the heart, by workers staying home and working at home.
Very Shakespearean.
Isn't that terrible? A dagger through the heart. But all these bosses have come out and it said it's a terrible thing and it's going to stuff up the economy and it makes workers unequal because police and ambulance and companies say they need extra money because they can't stay at home and work, so they need extra money for not being, for having to go to work, etc. But also, personally, I think we all admire Tania Constable as head of the Minerals Council. She says that, it's pretty awful. She says that the noisy activists and those that would seek to diminish industries like the mining industry in region Australia, they're well aware of. We have a high integrity system and it's highly regulated. What others might be saying is because they want to see the mining industry stop because all these bloody environmentalists, etc., are attacking their industry, and it's terrible, ridiculous claims by the left-wing Australia Institute that the mining industry engages in questionable conduct to get around the safeguard mechanism, which some critics consider a de facto carbon tax on large polluters. And what we find interesting, of course, is that she's defending the right to have these offsets that they do, which means you can just keep polluting to your heart's content. But it was reported this week that Shell earned $90 million in carbon credits from the government, even though it increased its emissions by 400,000 tonnes due to some loophole in the legislation and in the original agreement. So their emission shot up by 400,000 tonnes and they got $90 million in carbon credits for all that. Isn't that wonderful? And Tani is complaining about the fact that people are complaining about it.
The carbon credits, they remind me a bit of the old medieval indulgences.
Yes, that's right. Well, you plant a tree at the back of Bali somewhere and say you've saved the world and just keep polluting to your heart's content.
You should sponsor sin eaters and just give a dollar to a vegan for every ton of
carbon
dioxide they emit.
It's not like we're in one world with one atmosphere, is it?
Oh, no. But I'll just...
doesn't feel like we're in one world, no.
I'll just finish by saying that also... The government's talking about gas reservations, so you provide some. Now, we think it should be getting rid of gas altogether. Yeah. But obviously the companies realise that this is going to cost them a hell of a lot because they're going to have to, the prices will come down if it's local rather than what they sell on the world market. So they've actually made some agreement where they're prepared to pay more tax if this doesn't go ahead. And I think to work out just how bad it is, there were three stories in the Financial Review this on Monday. Producers weigh tax deal to avert gas plan. There was a so-called feature article, gas intervention risks hangover, and even the editorial the same day, reservation alone is no solution to our gas problem. So obviously those who make money out of gas are getting quite disturbed about it. So I think it's one to keep an eye on. That's all I want to say. We'll take a break, come back and have a yarn to Max Costello.
Wonderful.
Okay, on the line we've got Max Costello. Max is a lawyer who worked particularly in human rights and refugee issues. And Max, you've written a paper in which you criticise Angus Taylor, the leader of the opposition, of course, for saying he would deny social benefits, age, pension, employment payments, rent assistance, etc., to non-citizens, including permanent residents. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it, and Angus should have known this, is that over 50 years ago, Australia, via Malcolm Fraser, a real, not just a would-be Liberal Prime Minister, an actual Liberal Prime Minister, ratified on Australia's behalf an international covenant called the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. And in amongst that, to boil it right down, it says that everyone in Australia, a ratifying country, has a right to social welfare, social security. And Taylor, well, he should have known it, but maybe he didn't. But if he did, what he's announcing, with no authority whatever to do so, is a massive wholesale breach of a significant human right that had been ratified 50 years ago. It's extraordinary that he would dare have the chutzpah to do so when his predecessor ratified it formally. It's just extraordinary. And, of course, the cruelty and the complications of it are you know, one could explore those, but just on principle, it's a shocker.
All right, and Australia, of course, has signed up to this, but also Australia has, you know, taken something like 50 years or something, and it still hasn't quite adopted all the convention, has it?
That's right. The covenant, as my article explained, the covenant has quite a package of rights. By the way, that covenant and its companion, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, they both derive from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that that FDR's widow was famous for, and it took a long time for the UN to actually translate it into workable, practicable sets of obligations. So that's the origin of it. And because of that covenant, the Economic, Social and Cultural Covenant, has so many rights in it that no country could possibly provide them all at once. And so very sensibly, there's a provision, an article in that covenant that says that those rights are to be provided via a slower process. They call it the principle of, sorry, I'll just have to get the exact words, but a slower process because they can't all be provided at once. But it's progressive...
Progressive realisation principle, yeah.
Yeah, the progressive realisation principle. But it's not only... That covenant not only allows countries time to progressively provide those rights, but it requires them to do so. It's not just an excuse, otherwise you could just do nothing. So, and one of the key ones, of course, is the right under section, sort of Article 11.1, I'll read it out. State parties, that's countries like Australia that ratify a covenant or an agreement, state parties recognise the right of everyone to an adequate standard of living for himself and his family, the masculine...
yes, forget the sexist bit. That was one of the points I was going to make. It's sexist language, yeah.
Well, it's a creature of its time, but it says in all of them that the masculine includes the feminine. So himself and his family, or herself and her family, including adequate food, clothing and housing. Now, we've had 50 years, Australia, to make sure that everyone has adequate housing. And where are we? It is disgraceful, it is egregious, it is shocking, because the government did not ensure that right of adequate housing was provided to everyone. Far from it.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, 50 years max, one would have thought that it's probably adequate time.
Absolutely. And successive governments have just not lived up to it. And although the UN has a sort of a monitoring and its supposed enforcement scheme, the periodic reviews and reports, I don't recall any of them from the UN saying, hey, this adequate right to adequate housing, how are you going with that? It just seems to have slipped past the attention of the UN overseers, oversighters, if you like. But that's where we are, and my article makes a few suggestions about what could be done to fix that. But the main thing was to expose Angus Taylor's outrageous, inexcusable, and vicious announcement in defiance of international obligations.
It would seem they're trying to outdo Pauline Hanson, wouldn't it? I mean, that's
yes, that looks like it. It's interesting. My piece says that this deprivation of people of their human rights has got to stop, and until Australia has a proper Human Rights Act, it won't happen. But I do pause to note that the people who, the particular group in Australia who are most extremely deprived of their rights under that covenant are the people, the non-citizens, on bridging visas. They're people on the last gasp. They might have lost, had to been deprived of their existing visa and as a sort of stopgap measure while they're awaiting deportation, they're put on a bridging visa. Now, every visa, you know, to come to in Australia and stay here, you've got to have a visa and the whole range of tourist visas, working visas and so on. But these lowest category ones, the very usually very short-term bridging visas, you can be deprived and are deprived of most of your rights, and they include housing, food, clothing, social welfare, employment. You know, there's quite a range, and income support, Centrelink support. But if you are deprived, as some of them are, of virtually all those rights, and in particular, if you're deprived of the right to work and the right to get any social security Centrelink benefits to live on, then you are surely homeless, probably destitute and starving. And people in those extreme circumstances are dying. There was a well-publicised case a few months ago of a fellow from another country who found himself in that situation and was sleeping rough in a Sydney park. He just died quietly, unnoticed in that park, and his body wasn't found for months. These are serious, extremely serious, vicious, cruel circumstances, and Australia's current government and predecessor governments, despite being obliged under the covenant that Fraser signed us up to, have trashed those rights blatantly, and the most recent example perhaps is the right to notice. If you're about to be deprived of something, you are entitled under various conventions, civil and political rights convention covenant, you're required to be given notice of that deprivation and a chance to be heard. Well, the Migration Act was amended by the Albanese government to expunge that and say, if you're about to be deported to Nauru, you are not to be given notice, which means effectively that the people about to be deported don't know. They'd be rounded up in the middle of the night, and therefore their lawyers won't know, and any last-minute attempts to argue their case is taken away from them. That's how extreme and vicious the breaches of the various rights entitlements have been destroyed.
And, of course, much of this goes back to the promise that Kevin Rudd made that no one who comes by boat will stay here permanently, and those sort of promises that were really giving in to what the Conservatives were coming up with at the time.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, it goes back to the Hawke governments, this deprivation. There was a case coming up involving some Cambodian boat people, and it was about to go to the High Court, and it was clear that the government would lose. So what they did on the day before the court case was scheduled, they rushed through the Parliament a change to the Migration Act that would defeat the claim. And that's under a Labor government. And, of course, the most famous or infamous override of an entitlement under that covenant is... not under the covenant, under the Refugee Convention. People will know the Refugee Convention has a central prohibition that if you're about to be deported, then you cannot be sent to another place, another country, where you'll face almost certain extreme persecution or even death. It's the French word, the prohibition against refoulement, refoulement, that is return to extreme danger. And under Tony Abbott in 2014, they altered the migration, amended the Migration Act to say the prohibition, refoulement, is irrelevant. That is the exact wording in the Act. And it goes on to say, even where a person is not just hypothetical, a person has been assessed his or her risks or dangers if deported to that country, have been assessed, and it is found that if they were sent there, they would face those extreme dangers or death. And even then, even after an individual assessment has been made to that effect, refoulement remains, quote, irrelevant, unquote. Now, that's still in the Act. Can I take you to something that follows on from that, Kevin? Because I've looked at the draft Human Rights Act that the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Human Rights has come up with, and all it says about those legislative destructions of human rights is that the government, the Parliament, should scroll back over their record and find any cases where there's, raise a serious human rights issue and review it and possibly consider amending it, in other words, restoring the right. But as Ronald Reagan once said in a different context, government is the problem, because it's government that have trashed those legislative, destroyed or sabotaged those rights. So how can we expect government of either persuasion or any persuasion to do that good work of restoring rights? What I suggest is that the Parliamentary Joint Committee should be empowered on human rights, should be empowered to do that review, recommend to the Parliament restoring those rights, and even, if they need some help, draft the amendment that would achieve that result. But relying on Parliament alone, the government, is just an empty gesture at best.
Interesting enough, the High Court has been giving the government a bit of a burst on some of these things, and an article last week that foreigners who have been unlawfully held in immigration detention could claim millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars in compensation after the High Court rejected the government's argument that it should not be held liable for illegal detentions. That was a case a couple of weeks ago, Max.
Yes, it was. That is a hopeful sign, but of course it applies, as you've more or less indicated, that it's only people who have in the past been deprived of their rights in particular circumstances. They belatedly get compensation, in effect. They'll have to sue for it, of course. But in other cases, the High Court has failed miserably. I'll give you a fairly, not quite so recent, but about a month or so ago, a court case was heard, or a couple of months ago, about a man who was about to be deported to Nauru, and he's got extremely severe asthma and psychiatric illnesses as well. And his case was, if I'm sent to Nauru, it's more or less a death sentence. And this should not happen. It's unlawful, surely. No, the High Court said, no, the Immigration Act amended, as amended by various governments over time, deprives you of that right. And it goes back to that Abbott decision that refoulement is irrelevant. Doesn't matter how dangerous it is for you, that's irrelevant. The Parliament has spoken. So the High Court is a bit of a mixed bag at the moment, Kevin.
And, of course, the government is actually making laws that run contrary to the covenant that Fraser signed, I mean, clearly.
Absolutely. And they're doing so more and more brazenly. And it's interesting in that decision, I don't have the reference in front of me, but in that decision, the court's reasoning was, the wording was along the following lines, because once again it was a last-minute amendment, further amendment to the Migration Act. We have this situation where there's a particular legal situation which, if it stays there, there will be, I'll call it simplistically, a problem. But the Parliament has remedied this and declared that the remedy applies retroactively. In ordinary terms, it applies retrospectively. And the court says we're familiar with that process and we accept it. Now, this is because the right concerned or the problem facing the individual was a civil matter. As you and your listeners would know, retrospective criminal legislation is almost a total no-no. If you did something that at the time was lawful and the government passes a law that makes it a crime retrospectively, that's so unfair, it's off limits in almost all cases. But in civil law, oh no, the High Court says you can do that and it's okay. Mm. We're used to that process. And that, I think that is a very disturbing acceptance by the High Court of something that's it's cruelly unfair.
Yeah. And, of course, housing is one of the areas where we haven't signed up, but we should. You've thrown up a few ideas as to how we could improve the situation here when we're supposed to provide housing for everybody.
Yeah, well, when you say we haven't signed up to it, well, to correct you on a fine point here, Malcolm Fraser did sign up to this covenant that had housing, an adequate housing as a human right. But what you're meaning, of course, is that the government, successive governments, have failed to live up to it.
Yes, they were.
And I just mention in passing that that a massive federal boost to housing, to public housing construction. I draw attention to the fact that recent censuses, back in 2021, the census might found that 7.4 million, found 1 million homes empty, and other data suggests that at any given time there are about 7.5 million unused bedrooms across Australia. Now, if we can get a significant percentage of those empty homes and empty bedrooms filled, I mean, there's opportunity there to provide housing within the existing stock, if you like. And finally, and I haven't heard this advocated elsewhere, there are now built in Australia, there's quite a range of companies that build these tiny homes that are often two-storey, but they're only the size of a garage. And they're self-sufficient. They've got solar panels in an area of decent rainfall. They've got their own tank. They're portable, that is, they're on wheels, they can be taken, transported, and the price of them is way, way below the $1 million you've got to spend to get a decent, ordinary house. And in the leafy suburbs of established big cities and country towns, there are places with very large backyards and front yards. Now, they could easily have one of these homes placed there. And again, that's something that's there and available now. But I haven't, your planning laws would need to be amended. That's the local council input. But there's not enough creativity and energy being applied at all levels of government to address this problem.
Well, it seems that all the money, the public money that's going to housing, is all going into the private sector. That's the major problem, isn't it?
You see programs, though. I was just watching one of the Liberal members of federal parliament say, we need more investment, we need more investment. What Labor has sensibly done is, if you want to claim the negative gearing of opportunities, that is, you take out a mortgage to buy a house, and this is under the old law, you take out a mortgage to buy a house, and of course, repayments is mainly interest in the first few years, and you can declare your rent income and then claim a deduction of the rent interest, and you could end up, for the first few years, you get more back from the tax man than you're spending. But Labor has very sensibly said, if you want to do that, you cannot do it on existing housing. You've got to you've got to pay for the building of a new home to increase the housing stock. That's a very sensible move. But yes, that's one good thing that's happening, but there aren't enough things happening.
Yeah, well, I hate to finish on an almost positive note, Max, but we are out of time. So thanks for your time this morning, and we'll talk again.
All right, next time I'll tell you what's wrong with the draft Human Rights Act.
Okay, thanks a lot. Max. Okay, Kevin, thanks a lot, Max. Okay, Max Casello there, who's, as you can tell, a lawyer who was concerned about these issues. Next week is, as my voice goes, is transport. It's first Wednesday. And thank you to Antimony, thank you to Anne, thank you to me, thank you to all of us.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.